Welcome, everybody. This is the March 3rd, 2022 meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. I'll call it to order. And under House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Hi, I'm here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins is present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne present.
Cleborne is present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick is present. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason is present. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Drazkowski. I just saw him joining in. We'll be good. Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. With that, members, Representative Cleborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes be adopted.
Representative Cleborne moves approval of the minutes for March 1st, 2022. Everybody wants to unmute. I'm all in favor. Please say aye.
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 Opposed? Our minutes are approved. We have four bills on the agenda today, members, and we'll start with House File 726, Representative Bonner. The bill is going to the Rules Committee, so Representative Bonner, you want to make your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to make the motion to bring House File 726, excuse me, before the committee and to move it on to the rules.
Representative Bonner has made the motion to refer the House File 726 to rules. Representative Bonner, you want to explain your bill? And I see you have some testifiers, and I hope they finally were able to get in. Representative Bonner.
Yes. For Amanda, I think one of my testifiers, Chayo, is still having difficulty. But I will go ahead and start with the presentation in the interim. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, House File 726 proposes a constitutional amendment be placed before the people of Minnesota to determine if they believe all people should have equal protection under the law. The amendment itself is quite simple and quite elegant. It states equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on the account of gender. While gender is the more modern and preferred term, we also know based on the recent Supreme Court case, Bostick versus Clayton County, that the terms gender and sex carry equal weight under the law. Specifically, the court ruled 6-3 with a conservative majority that the discrimination based on gender was the same as on the basis of sex. The Minnesota State Constitution is a reflection of who we are as a state, our values as Minnesotan, and fundamentally should represent equality under the law for all citizens. Currently, it does not. We ask of our citizens that they abide by our laws, that they respect the rule of law, yet we don't currently provide for equal rights and protections under the law. I will assert here today that our role as lawmakers is to represent the interest of 100% of our citizens all of the time, and not 50% of our citizens some of the time. Which begs the question, if our state constitution does not provide equal protection, which of our citizens do we exclude and on what grounds? Can we, as legislators, as lawmakers, decide who should and should not be included? I would assert it is our duty as legislators to protect every citizen equally under the law all of the time. In the past, arguments have been made that suggested that equality under the law would have dire consequences. None have come true. It was once believed that women might be asked to participate in the military. Today, women voluntarily serve with honor and distinction. They protect our state and our country side by side with their male counterparts. Do we as lawmakers have the right to look these brave defenders in the eye and tell them they do not deserve equal rights under the law due to their gender? Have they not earned these rights? It was also once believed that equal rights meant that women might serve as pastors, rabbis, and faith leaders. This could lead to the unraveling of the very fabric of faith and religion. And yet, faith and religion institutions are stronger than ever before, based on the devout and steadfast leadership. They serve God and our communities. As lawmakers, should we look them in the eye and tell them they deserve anything less than equal protection under the law? Do they not deserve this right? I'm a firm believer the citizens of Minnesota know inherently, deep down, the values we hold dear, that fundamentally all of our citizens deserve deserve equality under the law in service to each of us every day. As lawmakers, it is our job to ensure the rights of citizens, all of our citizens. This is simply allows us to get out of the way and allow our citizens to judge for themselves if they believe that inherently all citizens of Minnesota should have the expectation of equal rights and protections under the law. And with that, members, I ask that you vote yes to put the most fundamental of decisions in the hands of the Minnesota citizens. With that, Mr. Chair, I do have three testifiers here to speak on the bill, as well as a number of individuals from ERA Minnesota, the testifiers themselves, and Gender Justice, an attorney from Gender Justice, to answer any potential questions.
And I see I've got three people on the list, and I got three people listed as being here if needed to answer questions. And the first person on my list is Curtis Johnson. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair Nelson, committee members. My name is Curtis Johnson, and I'm with ERA Minnesota. I live in Little Canada, and I'm here today to ask you to pass HS 726. Enshrining equal rights protection for all citizens is not and should not be considered a partisan exercise. 23 states have adopted state constitutions or constitutional amendments that prohibit the denial of equal rights under the state law based on sex. These states include California, Indiana, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, Virginia, Texas, and Iowa. Iowa, how are we behind Iowa? But in all seriousness, in fairness, amendments to the Constitution, whether it be to a state or a federal constitution, are almost always contentious. James Madison didn't even want to write the Bill of Rights because, among other things, he thought the rights of citizens, or in his time, the rights of men, were self-evident. History has shown us that what is self-evident to one person is not necessarily self-evident to all. Legislators argue at length about the spirit versus the letter of the law. And those are good arguments, because what a law means versus what it actually says sometimes are two different things. Now, should the people of Minnesota choose to adopt this amendment, the rights of all people in Minnesota will be protected. It's pretty simple. I'm asking the members of this committee to take a step towards guaranteeing the rights of all Minnesotans, not because of political ideology and not because I told you so, you just met me, but because it's simply the right thing to do. And I would even go so far as to say that it's self-evident. Because today is the first week of Women's History Month, I will end my remarks with this quote from Amanda Gorman. Every day we write the future. Together we sign it. Together we declare it and we share it. For this truth marches on inside each of us. I thank you for your consideration, and I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. If you hang around, if there's any questions. The next person I have on my list is Christy Janingo. Welcome to the committee, and I hope I didn't butcher your last name too badly. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dr. Christy Janingo, and I'm a prior service non-commissioned officer of the North Dakota Army National Guard and former sergeant with the 132nd Quartermaster Company. I'm an Osseo Maple Grove American Legion Post 172 member. I'm a lay leader at Maple Grove Lutheran Church, where I am the church council vice president and an assisting minister. I hold a PhD in design and sustainability from the University of Minnesota. My full-time work is as the policy director for Commissioner Kevin Anderson of Hennepin County District 7. I grew up a rural middle child of five siblings. As a teenager, I was fiercely independent and seeking adventure, and that's why I joined the Army. I followed in the footsteps of my grandpa Roland, who served in the Army in Okinawa during World War II, and my uncle Ron, who served in the Guard. I kept the family legacy of Army service alive in my generation. I went to Fort Leonard Wood for basic combat training 2 weeks after the terrorist attacks of 9/11/2001. It felt good to do something constructive. I served 6 years as a 92 Whiskey, an Army Ground Forces support role that functions like a city water treatment plant only on a 30-foot truck bed. I may look different from what some picture for prior service military, but that perception may be changing. The women of Ukraine are taking up arms to fight for their freedom, and American female veterans have defended freedom for decades. The VA and partner organizations promote a campaign called I Am Not Invisible to bring awareness to challenges female vets face. There is a persistent false notion of women being less than men to overcome. That is a risk to the strength of our military and our national security. I am not invisible. So I ask you today to support this bill, to allow the people of Minnesota to add the Equal Rights Amendment to our state's constitution. If I can honorably serve with the willingness to die for God and country, then I think I've earned equal rights under the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Janingo, Dr. Janingo. Hang around for questions if there are any. The next person I have on my list is Chayo Smith. Welcome to the committee. If you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, committee members. My first name is Chayo, last name is Smith. As a civilian, I work as a bioenvironmental engineer, public health officer, and alternate SARC, sexual assault response coordinator for the Department of Defense. I have been serving with the Army National Guard. I've been in the military for 20 years. I'm a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, pursuing an MS in environmental science. However, my most important job is, and my life's work, are my children. I'm going to talk about my military career. I felt I had to be better, smarter, and faster than my male counterparts. Sometimes this competition does bring out the best and brightest in parts of ourselves, but the unrelenting scrutiny over my performance as a female troop contributed to a lot of burnout. And because I did not want to rock the boat as the only female soldier in an Army unit of 22 men, I did not report my own sexual assault until 11 years later, because I didn't want to jeopardize my career, and I remained silent. One in four women are assaulted in the military, and men are not far behind us. The numbers are one in six. The Minnesota National Guard does not fall under the federal UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It falls under a state code that which the state constitution is a governing body, and it is necessary that we include this verbiage in our state constitution. My career is not over yet, and I have much to give. But how can I expect my immediate leaders to treat all of us equally when we cannot get our legislators to agree that equal treatment of all persons should be included in our state constitution? Now let's talk about my kids. They are strong and smart with brilliant and sensitive hearts. When my daughter was younger, I taught her to negotiate her salary for babysitting duties. I told her not to be afraid to ask for a couple extra dollars since she earned her Red Cross CPR certification. At that time, the gender wage gap was about 21%. When I explained this to her, she told me that it wasn't fair. And instead of telling her that life wasn't fair, I challenged her to make it more fair by negotiating for her real worth. But why? We shouldn't have to negotiate for our real worth. It is there and present, reflected in our good work, are collaboration and innovation. What astounds me about today's generation as opposed to any other is that they are in many ways smarter and more resilient. COVID has made them extremely resilient, from more normalizing neurodivergence and adapting to new learning platforms to the capacity for critical thought and innovation. The House file must pass so it can be included in our ballot for our future votes. The future belongs to our kids, not necessarily to us, but we can be part of that. The question I would put to ask opponents of this House file and this bill to put it in is, what are you afraid of? Just put it in the vote and put it to the people. Thank you so much. I relinquish my time.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. And with that, I have the other three people I have here, Ms. Wilhite, Ms. Foliard, and Ms. McQuaid, are here to answer questions if there are any that the author can't answer. So with that, members, I'll open it up for questions. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got a couple of questions for the author, Representative Bonner. The fiscal note for this bill shows a pretty significant cost to municipalities. I do not see an appropriation in the bill to help the municipalities with that cost. Is there a reason you did not include that?
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. This was sent out for a fiscal note, and as you can see, it came back with actually a much smaller cost. Generally, the cost for municipalities for balloting questions is absorbed into their regular budget.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was sort of an odd answer. There's almost $1 million in costs to municipalities, so I guess I don't know what we mean by a smaller amount. I get that the cost to the state is not significant, but the cost to municipalities, $775,575. I don't think that's insignificant for our municipalities. So number one, this is an unfunded mandate on our local municipalities.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative Bonner, let her finish your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next question I would have, Mr. Chair, is that I don't see a definition of gender in the bill. I was a little concerned during the introduction. It took a lot of talking until we heard the word women even referenced. And so I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if the author can help us to understand what definition of gender we are using for this language.
And Representative Bonner, if you have an answer, and if you wanted to ask, comment that you wanted to give before also. Representative Bonner.
Sure, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'm sure that there is someone from staff here who could adequately address the question of how ballot questions are addressed by local municipalities. If the representative has additional questions on that, but I will leave that one there for the moment. In terms of the definition of gender, I've already alluded to the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States of America has already indicated that the word gender is equivalent to the word sex, and sex is equivalent to the word gender. That has already been determined and established by the court, the highest court of the land in the entire country.
And Representative Bonner, if I remember right, reading the fiscal note, the figure that was quoted of the 720 whatever thousand it was had to do with if they needed to print a second ballot because there was multiple constitutional amendments on the ballot, and that would be statewide for the whole state. But Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So am I to understand that we are not referencing a definition in state statute for this, or we're not adding a definition in state statute for this?
Representative Bonner.
I don't think there is any better definition than the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
Representative Brindley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I am not sure why the vitriol from the author of the bill and the condescension, but we'll go with it. I would just say that there are significant concerns with the bill as we have addressed in the past. Number one, and first and foremost, is the lack of willingness to address the definition of gender. Again, I'm very concerned that women were not even mentioned at all until well into the introduction of the bill. And there's a lot of irony in the unwillingness to address this as an equal rights amendment for women. That is the original intent of this language. That was the intention of the original authors of the Equal Rights Amendment, was to ensure that women were treated equally under the law. And that is not what we get now. That's not what this is about anymore, which is really unfortunate. And there's, again, a lot of irony in the unwillingness to address this issue. About 21 years ago, I was a young pregnant mom, and I was pregnant with a friend, Kelly, who we had our children at about the same time. My Jack and her Maddie are about the same age. And Maddie is now a national spokesperson because as a young athlete, she has now lost all of her titles, not to women, but to men. She has lost her national titles to men, and she has become a national spokesman on this issue. So there's a great deal of irony in pushing this amendment with this language that is not actually helping women. It's not actually helping women, the people that it was intended to help from the beginning. I would also just add, I suspect I won't get very good answers from the author, but you know, both the state of New Mexico and the state of Connecticut have used the Equal Rights Amendment to abolish any reasonable regulations on abortion. And frankly, here in Minnesota, we're far behind. Frankly, nail salons are more regulated right now than abortion facilities. And that's a dangerous position to put women in. And I cannot support moving this forward, knowing that that is exactly how this amendment has been used in other states, and that it very likely would be used that way here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Representative Claiborne, you have your hand up.
Mr. Chair.
One second, Representative Claiborne. Representative Bonner, you had a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to really quickly circle back around. And I think that it's important to remember that, again, I apologize if Representative New Brindley feels that I have been less than friendly to her. However, I want to be direct and clear about the point of this amendment. The point of this amendment is not to talk about sports, which is a whole separate part of the law and is not part of this bill. That is not within the scope of this bill.
Yes, it is.
I also want to mention that this bill is very simply the ability of the citizens of the state of Minnesota to decide for themselves whether they believe fundamentally that individuals should have equality under the law, regardless of gender or sex, as determined by the courts. And that includes women and men, not just women.
And members, I just want to remember decorum in the committee. That when we were discussing the bill, the contents of the bill, and not individual personalities. And so please, if we could keep personalities out of the discussion and go from there. And Representative Brindley, I'll give you a second to respond, but
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the chance. This is a problem we run into all the time in the legislature. Legislators talk about the intent of what they are doing, but they don't address the actual language of what they're doing and how it is used in other places. I trust Representative Bonner at her word on what her intent of this is. However, the actual language that we have before us and how this language has been used in other places does not fulfill what she is suggesting. So I think we need to keep that in mind. This is another instance, we hear this all the time. The language we have before us is incredibly problematic for women. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You addressed my issue. I was going to raise the point of order for personalities. It is not appropriate for any committee member to attribute intent to the comments of another legislator and to attack them as condescending. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Any other questions? Seeing Representative Claiborne, did you have your hand still? I see it's okay. If not, I'm just gonna make a comment here on this. My mother used to tell me that my grandmother, who was trying to divorce my grandfather back in the early 50s, that at that time, to get divorced, for a woman to be able to divorce her husband, she had to prove that she was abandoned and had to wait 7 years, similar to what you have to prove abandonment on real estate property or whatever. And so, like I said, this is an important piece of legislation that we need to move forward. So Representative Bonner, you want to wrap up? Representative Brindley, you have another question?
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious if perhaps the author knows or perhaps staff knows, is that the case today? Would a woman have to wait to and prove those issues today under the law?
My understanding that has changed, but back in the 50s, and that's not that long ago, that was what...
years ago.
That's not that long ago, Representative New Brindley. Anyway, Representative Druskowski, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Representative Bonner would tell us how many genders there are.
Representative Bonner.
Representative Druskowski, I don't believe that is covered in the scope of this particular bill. I believe that is up to the courts to decide on what is indicated by the words gender, which I think you may have come late to the table here, but I already alluded earlier to the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States of America has already ruled on that particular issue.
Representative Druskowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner. But Representative Bonner, you said sex equals gender earlier. That would imply that there's two genders. And I don't think that's what the discussion around gender in the legislature under Democrat control has been. That's been my experience in the past. So I'm curious, are there only two genders, Representative Bonner?
Representative Bonner.
Again, Representative Druskowski, that is outside the scope of this bill.
Representative Druskowski.
Well, we're a major dodge, Mr. Chair. The reality is, in my experience, has been with this legislature and possibly even the author of the bill in the past, the discussion has been that there's more than two genders, according to the Democrats. And I think Representative New Brindley's pursuit of inquiry in this bill is well-founded. Thank you for the discussion. I know how I'll vote, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. Representative New Brindley, one last quick question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate the time. Just to be clear, the very crux of this bill, of this amendment, is gender. So to say that gender is outside of the scope of this bill is mind-boggling. Of course, that is the very crux of this bill is gender. So an unwillingness to define it or even have the author address it is just mind-boggling. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our responsibility as legislators is to define. The court's responsibility is to interpret the law. So the lack of definition has caused multiple issues within the courts. And I think we ought to remember that we are the ones that write the law, define and put into statute, and the courts just interpret, or at least that's what they were set up to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Bonner, if you want to wrap up and we can get to a vote. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear when we circle back around that it is correct that this courts actually determine the intent of the law in terms of the interpretation of that law. That has been done. That is already an issue that has already been settled. That is not for us as lawmakers to decide. But the bill before you today is not about that question. The bill before you today is to ask the citizens of Minnesota whether they believe that women and men of equal gender or sex, as determined by the Supreme Court, should be treated as equal in the eyes of the law with equal rights and equal protections. I want to say that women currently are the only unprotected class under the Constitution. I want to repeat that again. We are the only unprotected class under the Constitution. And what that means is that in a court of law, when any law that we have that attempts to equal the playing field for women and men were to go all the way to the courts, that we lack the basic foundation for a higher level of judicial scrutiny. Why does that matter? That matters because the courts use that strict scrutiny to decide whether or not there is a legitimate reason for that court case to proceed forward, and if there is legitimate harm that has been created. Women have been fighting for hundreds of years to have equality under the law. We have women such as the women here today before you who are exemplary models of women in our current and modern society. We have women like Justice Gildea, who heads the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota, who isn't responsible for interpreting the very laws that do not provide her equal protection and equal rights under the law. I don't think that the people of Minnesota need go any further than their own conscience to decide whether they believe that the people of Minnesota, regardless of gender or sex, should have equal standing and equal protection under the law. This bill is simple. Let us bring it to the people and let them decide.
And Representative Bonner, do you want to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 726 be moved on to rules.
Representative Bonner renews her motion that House File 726 be referred to the Rules Committee. Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson votes aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, no.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski votes aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Chair, with a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the Rules Committee. Thank you, Representative Bonner. The next bill we have in our committee is House File 2026. Representative Hornstein, I will move House File 2026 be referred to the General Register. Representative Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, you want to present your bill?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and members, House File 2026 is a memorial resolution. We have on occasion gone on record as a legislature to implore, in this case, Congress. There's other entities of the past we've done this with, but in this case, implore Congress to provide an extension for states to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment as a constitutional amendment. And this was passed actually by the House of Representatives last year. It's awaiting action in the Senate. And so this resolution simply has this Minnesota legislature on record as imploring the Senate to also grant an extension so that the ERA can be ratified in due time here without going back to square one and in the early 70s and having states individually, again, go through the ratification process. So members, it's a memorial resolution. The resolving clauses, I think, are the key ones here. And I want to simply conclude by saying that I was honored to be asked to carry this by ERA Now. I feel strongly about this issue. I come from a tradition of women that have made their way as really pioneers in the workplace, and starting with my mother of blessed memory, who came to this country as an immigrant, as a refugee from Europe after World War II, a Holocaust survivor. She went to medical school in Europe and was one of the first women to practice pediatrics in my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, in the 1950s. And then my wife is the first woman to become a rabbi in the city of Minneapolis. Amazingly, that didn't take place until the late 1980s. I'm very proud of my daughters who are also making their way in the world. Now, my oldest is in my wife's footsteps. She's recently ordained as a rabbi living in Boston. And my middle daughter is a teacher in the Minneapolis Public Schools. And so I carry this for generations of women and ask for your support.
Representative Horsing, I see you have one testifier, Ms. Wilhite. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Wilhite, and I'm president of ERA Minnesota, and I'm here to support House File 2026. This is a simple resolution. It's simply memorializing to Congress to remove the extra textual timeline to the Equal Rights Amendment at the federal level. And a reminder, the federal Equal Rights Amendment is 24 words. That's equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. And if you recall, the 19th Amendment also says on account of sex. 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote. So this is similar, and in Minnesota, we are saying gender. But for the resolution, we have had strong support, bipartisan, for this. And both houses, as Frank has mentioned, passed the ERA in 1972. Minnesota ratified in 1973. We are still waiting, and we want to have equal rights in Minnesota and at the U.S. constitutional level. This fight came back to life when Nevada ratified the ERA in 2017. Illinois 2018, and Virginia in 2020. That met the required 38 states. And so we are now trying to clean up some of the legal hurdles that are in place, such as a time limit that was in the preamble of the Constitution or of the amendment. And the states did not vote on the preamble. They voted on the 24 words. That's what Minnesota voted on. So we want to remove that time limit, because the U.S. Constitution is the fundamental framework of our federal system of government. And historically, women have been underrepresented and intentionally left out. I wish they would have put a definition for people, because I would have liked to have been in that definition of we the people. So the ERA does not confer special rights on any individual or group. It simply prevents discrimination on the basis of sex. And that affects violence against women, pay inequity, which is huge for half the population, pregnancy discrimination, and unjust laws that impact men and women and all genders. So in the spirit of full knowledge that the Senate and House have overwhelmingly passed this bill in the past. I urge a yes vote on House File 2026, that we the people should mean all people, and equality should mean equal rights for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilhite. I see we have questions. I see no other testifiers on the list. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hornstein, I enjoy our friendship. I'm going to be voting no. And here's why. I have an amazing wife, and she is a very smart woman. She is an industrial engineer. And for those of you that know the engineering field, you know that it's a predominantly male-dominated world. She on her own, decided to be an engineer and worked through that very hard. And she herself put herself on equal footing. And I spoke to her last time this came up, and I spoke to her again last night. And I asked a number of very pointed questions, and she said, you know, Jim, I don't need an amendment to make me equal. I knew I was equal to start off with. And I share the same experience with my mom. My mom was the director of nursing at a large hospital. She feels the same way. Doesn't need an amendment to know that she is equal to men. So for that reason, I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Ms. Willett for her testimony. That was, or Wilhite, I apologize if I said your name wrong. I appreciate that testimony and that focus, and I agree with you on those things. My question to the author of the bill, Representative Hornstein, I know that the Justice Department has already ruled on this, and they said that Congress had the constitutional authority to impose a deadline on the ratification of the ERA. And because that deadline has expired, the ERA resolution is no longer before the states. And so their interpretation was that even when those final states passed it, the resolution was no longer before the states to be able to do so. And even, frankly, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, even she said in a panel just a couple of years ago that the deadline to ratify the measure as a constitutional amendment has expired, and that the decades-long effort must start anew. And so I'm wondering, Representative Hornstein, if you have reached out to our federal partners who would actually have to take action on this, what the interpretation is, and if this is even a possibility. Here, this is symbolic, right? What you're doing here is symbolic. It doesn't actually bear any weight. And so my question is, among those whom could be decision makers, have you reached out to them, and do you have any insight?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative New Brindley. You know, it's my understanding, and I can have Ms. Wilhite comment as well, but it is actually within the jurisdiction of Congress to extend this deadline. And so with regard to our federal officials, some of them in the Minnesota delegation in Congress did vote in the affirmative to extend this deadline. We're awaiting action from the Senate. So I think this is a matter of interpretation. You're correct, Representative New Brindley. But Congress can act. It is completely within their jurisdictional duties to extend this deadline. And if I've left anything out, Ms. Wilhite, please comment. But that is my understanding, that the Congress can act, the Senate can act, and then we can, instead of turning back the clock to the early 1970s, we can get this done and get this done in a timely way.
I don't see Ms. Wilhite putting her hand up. Ms. Wilhite. There you go, Ms. Wilhite.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yes, that is true. It's determined that Congress can act, and the U.S. House has acted and has removed the timeline numerous times. It's the Senate that is challenge because of needing the majority. But at this point, we also have a date in March, I think it's 22nd, where the U.S. Senate is going to take up this very issue and address the timeline for the Equal Rights Amendment. So this is not dead. And as you know, if you know a lawyer, this gets battled back and forth and debated, but there are different legal opinions. And we have quite a few outstanding legal scholars that have said, yes, this is Congress purview to put a deadline on, take a deadline off, and that is what they can do. And so this is still alive. So this resolution matters. And it is important for the state of Minnesota to show that support to our U.S. Senate that we support removing that timeline from the Equal Rights Amendment.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Wilhite. And thank you, Representative Hornstein. And I appreciate the acknowledgement that even when the Justice Department and even when former Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg comment on this and the Justice Department offers an opinion on this as a legislature, we actually still have the power to make laws and interpret those laws and to do those things, because that is exactly right. Even when it comes to things like defining gender, we have the power and authority and responsibility to do that when we're going to use that kind of language moving forward. I still think this is problematic. I think it's problematic that this original ERA is almost 50 years old, and we are now trying to pass this for an almost 50 years old legislation. I think that this is symbolic and outside of our purview. So I will not be voting for this today, but thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your comment.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, my understanding is that constitutional amendments and passing by states, they must be identical. And so the shift in the use of gender as opposed to sex would make them not identical unless the official definition is that they're the same, which then would mean Title IX would require multiple teams and equivalent support for each gender, or it would mean only one team, because there would be no, you know, so you'd have one track team, one swim team, one gymnastics team, et cetera. So it does matter the definition of the word. But getting back to this about allowing for dissimilar, different worded amendments passed by states to be considered identical, I think that needs to be handled before we look at any multi-generational no deadline for adoption. I just was wondering if the author could make a comment on that, because the author is familiar with the writing of statutes and the right authority and responsibility for definitions and statutes to be clear. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein, I see Ms. Wilhite has her hand up. Do you want her to answer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam. I'll just simply say, and I will defer to Ms. Wilhite, whose hand is up, but you know, the issue here is that the Constitution requires 38 states, and so I'm not familiar with, you know, at this point, you know, it appears to me, and Ms. Wilhite can comment, that the 38 states have passed these, you know, resolutions, these constitutional amendments. And so that's really what the point here, and what we need to stay focused on, is the extending the time limit. And so maybe this is a matter of interpretation in the courts. But in terms of Congress, which is what this resolution is directed towards, and what the House passed, that was not an issue in my understanding, but I'll ask Ms. Wilhite to comment.
Ms. Wilhite.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. The issue is not, as I heard of Frank, the focus is on the resolution around the time limit. And actually, we should be focused in on the U.S. Senate. That is currently the body that needs to remove the extratextual timeline. The U.S. House has done that in numerous sessions. So it is really the U.S. Senate that needs to, and this resolution is specific to that. And to the question about wording, all 26 states have a current state equal rights amendment, and they are not all the same. Some are very, very comprehensive. Wyoming's, which has been in place since 1890, is about a paragraph long, includes the word sex at that time, and says all members of the human race are equal. Imagine that. So no, states can have their own language in their equal rights amendment, but the focus of this resolution is on supporting the U.S. Senate to remove the extratextual timeline, which the U.S. House has already done. And they propose to vote on that this month, March 22nd, we're hoping for. So this has been a messy affair. Would it be nice if it was less? Yes. But we have an amendment, the 27th, which took over 200 years, the Madison Amendment. So if you want to talk about a timeline, that one was allowing Congress to approve their own salary. And that took over 200 years. So we have some history of bumpy roads to finalizing amendments at our U.S. Constitution. But this one we would like to get done sooner, and especially women would love to have this done sooner than later.
Thank you, Ms. Wilhite. And remember, members, this is not dealing with the previous question about gender and sex. This just is about memorializing the U.S. Congress to pass to remove the time limit.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam.
The question and implication of this is to change the way things are done on the federal government. And the federal national constitution affects the state of Minnesota. So simplifying it and ignoring the intricacies involved in what this would be talking to is very valid. We must, you know, we have a lot of bills that have wonderful sounding titles, but it's the details and the rippling effects and the full scope that we have to consider when we look at things. And so that's why I want to make sure that we look at the whole picture, because it is not trivial. Everything we do is not trivial, because a future generation can interpret differently. And so I'm sorry that we're just looking at this. Oh, it's just ceremonial. I just thought we were taking this seriously. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason.
I will be voting for this bill, and I take this very, very seriously. I have to tell you, the fact that here we are in 2022 listening to what I consider some incredibly discouraging and appalling comments is amazing. But I will give you one example of some of the unfair practices I've had to undergo during my lifetime. When I had my first real managerial job, I was told I was being paid the most a woman could be paid for that job. It didn't include that I'd have to lift anything, move anything, just about thinking. And for the record, many years ago, I used to be part of the GOP feminists, which I have no idea whether that exists anymore. But again, this is 50 years in the making. It should have been passed, centuries ago, actually. So again, I plead with you, let's get this done. Let's provide safety for our future generations so they don't have to suffer the indignities that some of us have exhibited over the past decades, centuries. Thank you.
And just remind members, this is a resolution memorializing Congress. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. And I think you said it well, that this is a symbolic gesture. I appreciate, Chair Hornstein, the purpose of bringing this forward. I think we've heard through the testimony a number of instances where current law has caught up to society, and we've changed some of the stuff that Representative Mason had just mentioned. While this is important, it is only a symbolic gesture. And to the previous bill, I think we've also established that it is important to have a definition that is excluded in the previous bill that we heard relative to this bill related. And so I appreciate your purpose, Chair Hornstein, but I don't think there's a practical effect of this. And we're also looking to change the rules for something that I don't know that it's necessary to continue to keep changing rules until we get the outcome that we want. So I appreciate the purpose. I think as a society, our laws have come up to provide a lot of protections that are there. And it's our job, if there are other statutes that need to be corrected, we can do that. But this symbolic gesture doesn't have a practical effect. And so I don't think that it's necessary for us to advance this proposal. But I appreciate bringing it forward in the discussion among the committee.
Representative Bonner, quickly.
Thank you. I just want to thank Representative Hornstein for bringing this forward. And I have to tell you, for the gentlemen on the call who say that this is only a hollow and symbolic gesture, you have clearly
those
not
are the words
lived
of the
life
chair.
As a woman.
Representative Kosnick, Representative Bonner has the floor. Please respect other members when they're speaking. Representative Bonner.
And I say that with all due respect, but I think most of the women on this call today can tell you that they have experienced discrimination based on sex. And so this is more than just a symbolic gesture. And that is not in a slight at any of my male colleagues, just to be clear, and I will thoroughly apologize if they took offense to that comment. However, I am stating the obvious. I just want to say, however, that this bill is about talking about the deadlines that we have in Congress and removing that deadline. There has been some considerable debate around the deadline specifically, and I want to be clear about one very specific point on that deadline. That deadline was not actually part of the amendment, and I want to make it clear that that is a distinction. That deadline was included in what's called the preamble to the amendment. So there's been much debate between legal scholars about whether or not this issue actually matters or does not matter, but we do know that Congress does have the ability to repeal that date. So this bill is about asking Congress to step up, to do their duty, and to repeal that date. And I, as someone who has experienced this, I want to reiterate that this amendment is not just symbolic. Yes, we have a patchwork of laws that are designed to try and create equality under the law for women and for men. But the reality is that if this goes to a court of law, to the highest court of the land, or the highest court in the state of Minnesota, that they are not necessarily going to be granted equal weight or equal protection. And so it is important that we look at this not just as symbolic, and in fact, most individuals, if you were to ask young people today, they believe they already have these protections enshrined in the Constitution, which they do not. So I want to thank Representative Hornstein for taking the critical step to bring this forward, to talk about this issue, to repeal this deadline, and make it so. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Brindley, again, remember this is the resolution. This is a bill for a resolution memorializing Congress to remove the extra textual time limit. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say, I believe that I'm actually the first one in committee today who suggested that this was symbolic, and I assure you that I am all one. The preamble, as we're referring to this, is actually part of the enabling legislation. So to suggest that it's somehow something different or separate is just not how legislation works. The legislation is part of it, is the enabling legislation. And I would also just say, you know, as a woman, I have certainly experienced things that are difficult. In the workplace, in personal situations, I have certainly running for office, I've experienced things that are difficult that I don't believe that my male colleagues experience the same way. However, I find it really, really interesting and instructive that Representative Bonner said that young people believe that they already have these protections. And I would suggest that my young daughters believe that they already believe that they have these protections. Because while the ERA has not been ratified, they do have these protections. They do have these protections through other parts of the Constitution and through being treated equally under the law, all persons being treated equally under the law, which is why our young people believe that. Because young people today are not having the same experience that young people were even frankly 30 or 40 years ago when I was a young child. And certainly they're not having the same experiences that were happening 50 years ago, or we had referenced an experience of someone 70 years ago. Our daughters are not experiencing that same thing, thank heavens. And yes, this is indeed symbolic, and it is not just the men on our committee who believe that it is symbolic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, members, I think we've had enough questions and discussion. Representative Hornstein, I'll renew my motion. We have other bills to get to and continue this discussion. I'll renew my motion that House File 2026 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll, please?
Yes, thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson votes aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nay.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Jaskowski.
No.
Jaskowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski votes aye.
Pulaski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Chair with a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
Chair Hornstein, you're on your way to the General Register. Thank you for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
The next bill we have on our agenda is House File 2847. Representative Moran, welcome to committee, Chair Moran. We don't have the fiscal note on this yet, so we're going to be laying this over till we get the fiscal note. But Representative Moran, if you want to explain your bill, and I see you have one testifier.
All right. Well, good morning, members. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. I want to thank you for allowing me to introduce this bill this morning. This bill is an ERA compliance bill. With the final ratification of the Equal Right Amendment having occurred on January the 27, 2020, and the ERA having reached the 2-year waiting period after final ratification, the 28th Amendment is now the law of the land, and we will uphold the law. I swore an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution. I am duty bound to confirm that the laws of Minnesota comply with the U.S. Constitution. This ERA compliance bill is a first step to achieving that goal. I've talked to my colleagues in other states who have also undertaken a similar project, states like Arizona, North Carolina, Illinois, with more to come. Just this year, in January of 2022, 24 states affirmed in federal court that our Constitution has a 28th Amendment. They are Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin, along with the governors of Kansas and Montana. The current position in the U.S. Department of Justice, as issued by the previous Trump bar opinion, is out of alignment with current statement issued by the White House. The DOJ has asked for additional time to respond to the state's attorney general, for which the deadline is, as you've heard many times over, March of this year. We assume that this new administration will come to a better understanding. The ERA passed both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House in 1972, and today 38 states have ratified, which is all that the Article 5 of the Constitution requires. It has therefore completed all constitutional requirements to be added as the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Previously, no constitutional amendment, never, having been passed by both houses of Congress, then ratified by the legislature of 3/4 of the states, have ever failed to become part of the U.S. Constitution. The ERA must be no exception. As we know, our courts balance fundamental rights when they might overlap. For example, we can't yell fire in a theater. We can't yell fire in a theater despite our rights to free speech. Distinctions based on sex, however, is not automatically prohibited by law, but understanding where those distinctions currently exist, or if they exist, in our statute and codes is necessary for serving the people of Minnesota. So this ERA compliance bill we introduced today is step one to ensuring that our laws and codes are aligned with the 28th Amendment that reads, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on the account of sex. And Mr. Chair, that is my testimony.
And thank you, Representative Moran, Chair Moran. We have one testifier, Ms. Folliard. Welcome to the committee, former Representative Betty Folliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Betty Folliard, founder of ERA Minnesota. Thank you, members, for listening today. This is a very simple bill. It's only two paragraphs long, and it's just asking the reviser with Senate counsel to review our laws and review our rules to see if they are in compliance with the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. Why do we need it? Why do we need to do this step? Because we will be subject to lawsuits if we are not in compliance with the Equal Rights Amendment. It became the 28th Amendment on January 27th, 2022. And we are now looking at that, as I say, and as Representative Moran says, there's never in the history of this country been a constitutional amendment that, having passed all of the requirements of Article 5, was stopped by a memo or by an administration. And so this obviously is going to be litigated, but the interesting thing is that in 1920, when women finally won the right to vote, that gave some women in America the right to vote, in 1920, there were lawsuits. And those lawsuits were to prevent women from voting. We are now seeing the lawsuits to prevent us from having equal rights in America. And that's not okay. I wanted to just quickly address the symbolic nature of the ERA, because that was a big issue earlier. And just understand that symbols matter. The ring on your finger is a symbol, and it matters. The flag that people will fight and die for matters. The blue and gold that we're seeing right now and that we saw in the State of the Union address matters as we symbolize our support for the people of Ukraine. So symbols matter, but this is personal. Everything is political, but for me, this is personal. I am a mother and I'm a grandmother. And I just want to share another quote by the late, great Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who said, "I would like my granddaughters, when they pick up the Constitution, to see that notion that women and men are persons of equal stature. I'd like them to see that is a basic principle in our society." That's me. That's me for my daughter. It's me for my granddaughter. And so I ask you to look at our laws. Look at this bill simply asks the reviser to look at the laws, look at our rules, and make sure that there is not inequality across the boards in our laws. And with that, Mr. Chair, I ask you to vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Questions? I have two hands up right now. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran, thank you for the bill. Earlier, I don't know if you were here when we had the discussion on Representative Bonner's bill, but Representative Bonner maintained that sex equals gender, and she had a bill that brought forward language to amend our state constitution that used the word gender instead of sex, which is incongruent with the U.S. Constitution. So I'm curious, your bill would be an amendment to our state laws and would direct our state to act. It would seem to me that if you were going to go the same direction as Representative Bonner, you would include the word gender in your bill rather than sex-specific language and sex-specific treatments. You would say gender-specific language and gender-specific treatments. Can you explain?
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair and Representative Druskowski, I won't remiss and go back to Representative Bonner's bills or anyone else's bill, but the bill before us and the language before us is equality of rights under the law should not be denied by the United States or by any state on account of sex. This is the language that we're putting forward. That is what we, as we look through the our Constitution, that we are, as we search through that, we're going to make sure that everything is aligned to this statement here. And my hope is that, you know, in the 21st century, that we have seen that we have gone through all of the duties, the responsibilities and of our Constitution to do the right thing, to have this amendment in place, that we as a state here in the state of Minnesota would abide by that and begin to codify our laws and policies that we have on the book to be inclusive of the statement below.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Moran, I appreciate the explanation and the fact that you are properly aligning your efforts here, whether members support the bill or not, you are properly aligning it with the U.S. Constitution. And certainly Representative Bonner's bill was malaligned, and you are doing it correctly. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moran.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moran. I actually really do like this bill, although, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that you are laying it on the table. Did you say you're laying it on the table or laying it over for possible inclusion?
We're laying it over for possible inclusion, but we're laying it over till we get the fiscal note. And at that point, we will may or may not pass it on. But that's right now, we don't have the fiscal note. That's why we're laying it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that when we get that fiscal note that we can have further discussion, because I actually really like the bill. And I think, frankly, even if the law is upheld and the ERA doesn't pass, we certainly should still make sure that our state laws are written to treat men and women equally. So regardless of whether federal law is upheld and the amendment does not pass, we should ensure that that's being done at the state level. So I appreciate that. I am concerned about the cost of this, that it's a direction to the reviser of statutes, and they're supposed to just coordinate with Senate Council, research, fiscal analysis, House Research Department. My guess is, I mean, we've all seen how lengthy our statutes are. So I suspect that this review and this study will have pretty significant costs associated with it. So I do hope that we will bring this back to committee when we get that fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative New Bridley, that's my intent. Again, we don't have targets yet. We just got the forecast on Monday. We don't have our targets yet. So we don't know what we're going to have, but I know we do this on a regular basis of going through and looking at statutes and making sure that there aren't things in there that have problems. Representative Moran.
And Mr. Chair, from other meetings outside of this here and just trying to look at the fiscal note, what I have heard is not confirmed that there should be no costs associated with the body going through and codifying and looking at the statutes and codes and updating it. That is what I've heard, but I do appreciate the wait on to get the actual fiscal note.
I don't want to send a bill to the chair of Ways and Means bill. I don't want to send a bill to Ways and Means unless we have, you know, the costs. Representative Bonner, you have a question, and we have another bill we need to get to, so if you can make it quick.
I will be very brief, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Moran, for bringing this forward. I can tell you that I am excited to see how our Minnesota state laws comply with the 28th Amendment. And I can tell you that as someone who experienced discrimination in the workplace based on my gender just a short, a little over 5 years ago, along with about 90% of my department, in a Fortune 500 company here in Minnesota, that I realize that we have a ways yet to go to ensure that we have equality under the law and that our laws are making sure that we are treated equally. So thank you for bringing the bill forward, Representative Moran, and I look forward to the conclusions.
And Ms. Foliar, if you want to make, I see you've got your hand up on mic, a comment, make it quick, please. We need to get to the other bill.
This is just to clarify, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The use of the word sex has long been determined to refer to all persons regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, as underscored in the recent Title VII Supreme Court decision. That's Bostock versus Clayton. And I really recommend that everybody here who is not familiar with it, look it up. In that, Justice Neil Gorsuch reasoned, it is impossible to discriminate against a person for being homosexual or transgender without discriminating against that individual based on sex. So that's where that sex word, it applies to all persons regardless of their sexual orientation, gender identity. But also keep in mind that Minnesota ratified the Equal Rights Amendment in 1973. We are not re-arguing that point. We're not going to turn back the clocks in Minnesota. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, members.
And with that, members, I will lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you for bringing the bill, Representative Chair Moran.
Thank you, Chair Nelson.
And members, with that, with the next bill we have on our agenda, and we're also going to be laying this over again. We don't have our target yet, so I don't know, you know, what we can spend on this. But Representative Detmer's bill, House File 2863. Representative Detmer, if you want to present your bill, and like I said, I'll move it, and we'll lay it over for possible inclusion. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, anybody that's on the committee or those that have spoke that have served in the military, I just want to personally thank them for their service. And if you have family members, please thank them likewise. House File 2863, the Veterans Camp in Big Marine Lake is very familiar with the legislature, or I should say the legislature is very familiar with that camp. It's a very historic camp. It dates back to the World War I period, where it was an overflow for the VA hospital here in Minnesota. And I'll just give you the mission statement of it. It's a 501(c)(3) organization to provide rest and recovery and recreation for military families and the veterans and their families as part of the continuous reintegration process. How much time do I have, Mr.
Chair? We have to be done at 10 o'clock. It's 9:51. Okay. So
I do have one testifier here. There's actually two testifiers here, but I know Tom Bishop is going to be the main testifier. And the committee has all the handouts. The committee has all the PowerPoints and everything. We're not going to, you know, you can read that on your own. And I would really encourage you to do that, because if you haven't been out to this camp on Big Marine Lake, it's within the 7-county metro area. It's just an outstanding facility. Over 40,000 veterans just this last year and their families visited this camp. So with that, I'd like to introduce Tom Bishop. He's the president of the Veterans Camp in Big Marine Lake.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bishop. If you want to state your name for the record and proceed. And I know a couple of us on this committee heard this already in the Veterans Committee earlier this week. Mr. Bishop.
Yes, good morning, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Bishop, 21-year Navy veteran, president of the board of directors for Veterans Campground on Big Marine Lake. I know we're a little pressed for time, so I'm just going to speak to a little bit of some of the issues we have here. In 2021, we saw 41,313 visitors come through this campground. We welcomed 316 veterans to the campground for the first time. And these veterans, the demographics go all the way back to one World War II veteran that was a first-time visitor in 2021. So we had 316 new visitors to this campground last year with a total of 41,313 visitors. What we're seeing is with so many Minnesotans being called to duty, the Guards getting called up to active duty, so on and so forth over the past 18 years, we've seen a tremendous increase in veterans utilizing our resources up at the campground. The original farm was deeded to the veterans of Ramsey County back in 1926. And through the Great Wars and to the present, veterans have been coming up to this campground for reintegration, rest, and relaxation. And the way we're being taxed now, during the past 10 to 12 years, Veterans Campgrounds seen unprecedented increases in visitors. We went from 3,000 visitors to over 41,000 last year. That's in the last 10 to 12 years. 12 years ago, the campground would close down. The only one that would be on site would be the camp manager. We'd be open April 15th through October 15th, and then the camp manager would basically shut the campground down. But we have seasonal cabins up there now. We're seeing veterans demanding access to this camp 12 months out of the year. It's become a destination for many veterans, not just from Minnesota, but across the country. This greater demand has given us an opportunity a few years back. We expanded our RV sites, and we're looking at potential future growth. We're working with Washington County, and we've acquired an additional 3 acres of land, and we want to expand some of our resources. Unfortunately, with this growth, our septic infrastructure is severely outdated, and that's where we need the financial support to help update and expand so we can reach out and service more veterans. I believe that's the crux of it, and with that, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today to speak.
And members, this was originally sent to bonding, and bonding was referred to us because the nature of how the camp is owned, that it's not, it didn't qualify for bonding dollars. And there's a $774,000 fiscal cost to upgrade the septic system. And whether that comes out of our budget or bonding does it with cash, which they could do, that's the question going right now. But Representative Detmer, if you want to wrap up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And, you know, it's been an honor to represent a lot of different veterans bills over the years. And but I've taken a special interest in the Disabled Vets Camp, which used to be called Disabled Vets Camp. Now it's called the Veterans Camp of Big Marine Lake. And we have veterans, as mentioned by the president of the camp, that we have people coming from all over the country. And now we see a lot of younger veterans now, but they're young families. And we have multiplied the number of playgrounds and things that are for these families. And you'd have to be there to see how the veterans interact, all the different age groups. And this is a healing process for them. But I just want to thank Mr. Bishop and also Mr. Sandman, the vice president of the camp, for giving their input on this too. So, and thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to get done on time. And you have I've served on the cap on the this committee before with you, and it's been an honor to bring this bill forward. Thank you so much.
And we had originally scheduled this for yet tomorrow, but Representative Detmer had some conflicts. So, Representative Nash, do we have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick. As a father of a kid in the Navy, as I know you were too, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Detmer, for your continued and really unrelenting support of our veterans. I really hope that when the chair gets targets that we can include this in the bill. It's a worthy thing to know that our men and women who go and stand in the way of those that would do us harm would have something like this that they can rely on and go to and take advantage of. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any further questions or comments? If not, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Detmer, for bringing it. And hopefully we can, like I said, we can work it out between us and capital investments, where the bill goes and how it gets funded. Members, our next meeting is tomorrow morning. We have 4 bills on the agenda, and so I'll see you guys then. So with that, members, we are adjourned.